I'd like to welcome the panel to the stage. And we are very pleased to have a panel representing different perspectives of development cooperation. We have Joachim Beymo from SIDA, and we have Magnus Wallend representing civil society from Diakonia. And then we also have two government representatives, Laura Hartman and Anna Hammargren from the Foreign Ministry. So I'll start with you, Joachim Beymo. You are the head of the Director General's office, but also you have a long experience of communicating results. Interesting to hear. So what are SIDA's experiences on the results agenda and results-based management? And how do you view the criticism and these new alternatives that we see have been developed recently?
Well, first of all, I think I recognize a lot of the challenges that the report is showing. If you look at the year, the 10 years that I've been working with SIDA, I think we've seen a shift in political direction from more open and input-based strategies to more focused and output-based strategies, and now back to a little more open and input-based strategies, so to speak, from the political direction. So it's a bit about the change in politics, I think, the change we see, but also about our work at SIDA. And has it affected the choice of contributions and the choice of partners? I would say a little bit, but probably not as much as the previous government wanted and this government want, because I think in our day-to-day work, we are much more context-oriented, and it's more important the result areas and the partners' actual capability in the different countries and different contexts when we actually choose who to work with. To give an example, if we work in Afghanistan, for instance, and we get the assignment to support more girls in schools in Afghanistan. Today we work with three different programs. One is through the World Bank Fund, going through the Ministry of Education. One is through UNICEF, one is through Swedish Committee for Afghanistan. And of course, they would deliver different output results. And we don't choose depending on which one delivers the most girls into schools, because we have to have this different kinds of partnerships in a country to be able to deliver on the overall assignment to get more girls into schools in different parts of the country, but also to support the process of building education system in the country. So if we would only go for the quick results, we would not work with the Ministry of Education through the World Bank Fund, perhaps, because they would not deliver the most results in the short term within the strategy period. But at the same time, we know that the Swedish Committee for Afghanistan will not be able to deliver education 30 years from now in Afghanistan. So I think the results agenda is influencing the operations, but not directing the operations. I also think that preparing for this, I went through a management group meeting from 2006, from the autumn 2006, the minutes. And it was interesting to see what kind of discussion we had 10 years ago in SIDA. And one of the key takeouts was to support the results culture, but be very keen on ownership, local ownership. So to listen to this shift in policy, but also always keep in mind that the results are owned and designed by our partners. And I think that has been also the way that we have been working in SIDA. I think the results agenda has influenced the dialogue with partners, focusing more on frameworks, perhaps more on the choice of indicators. And we have been using standard indicators, but not to roll out partners, only to harvest results to be able to report more of the results in Sweden. I think one final point, perhaps, is that when we look now at the role of SIDA and development cooperation going into the implementation of the global goals and the Agenda 2030, I think that we also need to find more ways of showing results of mobilizing other partners, mobilizing more capital, and that kind of work is more work-intensive, labor-intensive. So we also need to find indicators and reports, reporting that are not output or outcome from partners, but actually from the processes that we support to be able to create global partnerships. And I think that's a challenge going forward. I also... One final.
Yeah.
I also recognize the lively internal debate around the results agenda, and I think that is something that we've been very lucky to have within CEDA. So when I was director of communications, and when I wanted to, you know, create this reporting to be able to tell something about the overall results of the Swedish Development Corporation, we had very good discussion, very good dialogue on how we support results, and I think that we managed to navigate that very good.
Thank you very much. Interesting to hear, and I think there are a number of questions, and we will pick up on some of these experiences from CEDA later on. Now I would like to turn to civil society and to Magnus Wahlund, your senior advisor at Diakonia. And for those who are not familiar with Diakonia, it's a Swedish development organization. And if I'm correct, you have more than 400 partners in 30 countries or so. So you have a very broad experience. So what are your experiences? Are they similar to ECIDA that's been a way of having a dialogue on results? Or do you have other experiences? And what do you see now when there are new alternatives coming?
Thank you. I work here in Stockholm at the Diakonia head office. So I'm not an academic, and I'm not handling aid programs. And that possibly is a weakness in this discussion. But I got a lot of input from several of my colleagues before this conversation. And of course, the discussion on the result-based agenda is not black and white. And I really appreciate the discussion in the paper, because it is very much depending on how the result-based agenda is interpreted and implemented. And talking about experiences, I would say that there is... I think there is a good dialogue we have with CEDA's CIVSAM, the Department of Work with Civil Society, about learning, about flexibility and long-term processes. We have different experiences with the embassies, because we also get money for programs through the embassies, and of course EU and other structures, where we have more, we can see more problems. On the positive side, I think that of course it's good to formulate results, to set up goals. It's good for us. It's good for the. I mean, we are not implementing. We are partners. For the partners to set up goals for themselves, and I can measure results. It also means the better accountability towards the recipients, the right holders, to hold us accountable, and the organization that we support. But if you're talking about the more stringent interpretation of the result-based agenda, there is also a number of negative experiences that we could also see in our discussions with embassies and with EU structures. And I picked up a few examples of what we can see now, and we recognize quite a lot of the British debate in that also, where there is what we can see long negotiations about indicators on both results and financial results or spending and so on, which is quite bureaucratic, and it takes a lot of time. One very concrete example that we negotiate for a quite big program in an African country, where we have now, after many months, made an audit on our application. And the application was for a 3-year program, and the audit of the application after months of discussions with partners, with staff, looking into detail, came with the conclusion that our application on 49,500,000 crowns was not accurate. It should be 49,492,000 crowns, counting pence in that. And of course, we don't think that that kind of result-based thinking is so efficient, either in measuring results and also in control, financial control. And that we can see in a number of countries where there is too much focus on specified indicators which our partners fear is not relevant, or there's a changing situation in many countries where climate change, there are conflicts, etc., that changes the situation. And how do you then, as a donor, accept when you haven't concluded or finalized the indicators that was set up? Or EU, that set up indicators already in the application, fixed. You can't change them. As we believe very much that development is local, we support partners organization with core funding. We believe very much in the right perspective that we are trying to work with. And in that context, a too rigid approach is quite problematic. It is actually in conflict, I would say. But I shouldn't also over-emphasize that, but we can see some tendencies that we are feel problematic, that also Swedish authorities need to communicate and to have a dialogue with the embassies on this. I also had one final thought. I was working quite a lot with the struggle against apartheid for democracy in South Africa. And I was just thinking, if we had a too rigid result-based approach in the 79, 1980, 81, 82, 83, etc., we wouldn't have had aid to South Africa because the situation was going backwards. They couldn't present clear results, and it was a changing situation all the time. And I think that we need to remind ourselves that the conditions are is changing, and our measure for result must have that in mind, I should say.
Thank you very much. Yes, there seems to be a general understanding of some of the risks and challenges with results-based management, and we have invited Laura Hartman who is the chair of a recently government committee on trust-based management, Delegationen för tillitsstyrning, to come with some alternative inputs today. And the government is also aware of the problems with some of the most perverted versions of new public management. And as a result, they have decided to take on initiatives to identify and develop alternative management approaches in the Swedish public sector. And we'd like to hear that. And you don't have a background in international development cooperation, and your current mandate is not directly related to development cooperation either. But it's interesting to see what's going on besides when it comes to developing management practices in Sweden outside international development cooperation. So very welcome. And we'd like to hear a little bit more about the background for this initiative and the task that you have ahead.
Thank you very much. The first day I was appointed for this task, Emma came into my room and invited me to this seminar. So this is really the first time I'm discussing these issues, which is very exciting since I'm, as she said, not an expert in this policy area. I've been working with lots of different policy areas, mainly on labor market, social policies, social insurance policies, educational issues, which of course are in your area as well, even though with not that much in Sweden, but in other countries. But anyway, yes, the delegation that we now call the Tillitsdelegationen, the official name, is a committee under government. We started in June this year, which is sort of a result of a background that started already in the election campaign, where Stefan Löfven and some other authors wrote an article, debate article, saying that let the professionals be professionals. And this is quite special. It's not that often these kind of issues are part of the election campaign, but this has been something that they've been working, this government has highly prioritized ever since they got elected. And first they started a seminar series discussing these issues with academicians and other involved persons around Sweden, 9 seminars last year, and Statskontoret has gotten some questions as well to look at, and now finally in June this year this delegation was appointed. And we are 3 members in the delegation. I am the chair, representing sort of academia research in this context, and then there's the head of Inspektionen för vård och omsorg. Don't ask me what that is in English. I forgot to check that. Gunilla Hult-Backlund, and one of the vice chairs of SKL, Association of Swedish Municipalities. And that says something also about sort of the context. We want to look at the whole public sector, and the task is to enhance, work for, make sure that the idea of trust-based management is spread and used in sort of more and more in the whole public sectors. And in that sense, you are not excluded, your area. But of course, the sort of the main focus is on welfare policies. But anyway, there's these municipalities are a very important actor here, as well as the state or the government as well. So we are looking at the whole chain of governance. It's said many times in our directives, hela styrkedjan, the chain of governance from the national legislation to basically the meeting between the personnel out there in schools, in primary care, the public sector worker, and the citizen. So we try to enhance trust in the whole chain. Well, what does that mean? Our task is both to sort of to analyze what should be, how should the system look like, how should management look like, and how should governance look like, but also to test different kind of models and to look what it leads to, follow those tests and evaluate them and look at the results, and thus get ideas of how it should look like in the future, but also have a very active dialogue with all the sort of actors in this process, which obviously are quite many. So we will have a very communicative work as well. And of course the problem, as we already sort of have stated here, is that the assessment, the impression, the feeling out there that there's the management is much too detailed, there's administrative burden that takes too much time and focus from sort of the work, the true work that all the teachers and the doctors and workers out there in the public sector should focus on. And this leads to bad quality. And, of course, all kind of other effects that people don't want to work anymore. They want to change jobs, and we have a problem with recruiting people into certain kind of areas. But in the end, of course, the focus is on making value for citizens, making value for the public of all these big amounts of money that we invest, taxpayer money that we invest in the public sector and in welfare services, and make sure that we find new models of management where we make use of the competence that is out there among the professionals in a better way, so we get out more quality. And Then, of course, the question that we are working, we have just started our work. I have a four secretaries in working with me, and we started in August, so it's a bit too early to say what it all leads to, but what we are working on right now is just to understand what is trust-based management. And so just some sort of key words that we are elaborating with is sort of the crucial conditions for success if we are about to take away some of the detailed management and increase sort of the space and the freedom for the professionals to make decisions in their work. Of course, there must be some crucial conditions there that make sure that we don't end up somewhere with bad quality in the end anyway. And I think one crucial thing is some common base of values and a common goals for these services and for the work in general. And I think that is something that I read also in the report, that it somehow has to be based on a very common idea among all the actors through this chain, what we are trying to achieve and what is the value that we are trying to achieve. And I don't think you can discuss it too much and have too much dialogue among these issues with the professions, but also with the decision makers. And among different actors. And I think one key issue, especially in the welfare sector, where many times many actors are involved with the same, if you look at it from the perspective of the citizen, it's often very many different actors, both from the municipality and state actors involved. You have to sort of, all these actors have to have the same picture of what we are trying to achieve as well. And an understanding of why we are here for, what is the task that we are doing. But of course, the issues of provision of competence and skills get very crucial. We have to make sure that we have very competent professions that all the time fill their sort of with the new evidence, with the new skills. And I think leadership is something very crucial. I think we have to, if we make this really efficiently, we have to also work a lot with the leadership within the public sector too. They are in a key position. But anyway, what we are going to do in concrete is that we are analyzing, doing a lot of analysis, of course, but two specific issues that we have to look at is the role of the auditing, the national auditing system. What is it focused on and how should it be in order to enhance learning and knowledge sharing and spreading in the public sector? So the auditing agencies are a specific question, as well as the payment systems. I mean, within the primary care, within schools, within all the kind of payment systems. We have a lot of private actors within these sectors, so the payment systems is an issue. But then perhaps the most exciting part that I would hope would sort of inspire you as well is that we are actually going to test new models within municipalities, within public authorities, through this chain. We're testing and we're letting researchers to follow and evaluate these new models and then get us new knowledge about this. And everything is done in very close cooperation with the municipalities and of course with the authorities within the state sector as well, but the sort of one of the most important goals of this work is that we really get these effects out there in municipalities. I think I stop there.
Yes, thank you very much. So moving from international development cooperation and those management practices to new initiatives in Sweden, now we move back to international development cooperation and the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. Anna Hammargren, you are head of the Department for International Development Cooperation, and very welcome. Now, of course, we are interested in hearing a little bit more about what is going on within development cooperation, and what does the government, what are the approaches from the government in this field? And is international development cooperation at par with the initiatives taken when it comes to the public sector in Sweden, when it comes to new initiatives and new ways of working?
Thank you very much for the invitation, and thank you to the other speakers, I think, especially to Kathy, of course, for the interesting report, but also, can you hear me in this?
Sure.
Okay. Also for comments made by colleagues here. And I think what you can see is that, I mean, when I listen to Laura, I can change a couple of words. I think many of you can, and just sort of reflect the same way upon the results-based management or the different approaches you can have on international development cooperation. So I must say we very much look forward to what you come up with, even if it's more of the welfare sector in Sweden. I think it could be useful to see how you could work more with trust in also our areas. Yes, I'm head of the International Development Department at the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. I've also dealt with trying to measure results or think about how to measure results on general foreign policy, which is even more sort of abstract than working with the development cooperation. For example, if you want to work with promoting peace in the Middle East, it's very difficult to LFA that. And if you cannot measure the results, as you mentioned, South Africa, should we not do this? I don't think a large part of the Swedish opinion would support that. So I think we have to reflect upon what sort of measurements we use for what sort of activities and what sort of contexts, which has already been pointed out. Well, I mean, I think we all want to see developments or results on the ground when it comes to development cooperation. So even if the results agenda so far has focused, for the last years, maybe a lot on information about results, it is, of course, these results on the ground we have to focus on, no matter what method we use to measure them. But apart from that, the government also has a responsibility to ensure that aid funds are used efficiently and effectively, and to report back to Parliament. So the accountability dimension is important. And furthermore, we must be transparent to the Swedish public, to our friends in the CSO world, and to partner countries, of course, on what we want to do and how we want to achieve it. But we are working in a complex world, and we have to adjust, as I said, to the context. And this is something we must live with, as was very strongly pointed out in the report. We must develop systems for management and follow-up that takes this complexity into consideration. The government is right now working with a draft policy framework, which focuses and maybe addresses more on how, or rather what, we want to do, and also what results we want to achieve. But the government has, as you, most of you are aware, the government on the development cooperation side does not try to tell or give directions on how to do things. It's more what should be, what we should focus on, what should be achieved. But the how to do it is up to the government agencies, in this case SIDA and a lot of the other development cooperation agencies. So both qualitative and quantitative data is needed, and results must be seen in a long-term perspective. When you look at the principal model for Swedish public management in general, it has since many years been one maybe best labeled as the result-based management. Objectives are set, achievements are follow-up, and lessons are supposedly being learned and used. And of course, the aid is part of the public service in general in Sweden and has been affected in this way and been part of the results-based management. At the same time, I would say, as Joachim was pointing to a little bit, that SIDA has moved in a wise direction when it comes to working with this. The Paris Agenda and its five components has always been conceived as a whole by the government. So it's not only the results part, it's also the other four parts, the partnership, ownership, transparency, coordination, harmonization, that has been part of the government agenda when it comes to working and measuring results in development countries. And there has also always been a long-term perspective, even if we have the one-year budgets that we have to work with, of course. And when Laura talks about trust, I feel that trust is something that we have worked a lot with as Joachim also pointed out. Trust is partnership and it's ownership in the terminology of aid. And that is still at the core, of course, for the government. The difference is, of course, then maybe from the other sort of part of Swedish public service, is that the services we provide, the results we want to achieve, should be achieved abroad with other partners abroad in different contexts. It's a cooperation. It's said in the name, development cooperation. And in this aid policy framework that the government is working with, it stresses the main responsibility for development. It does rest with the partners that we have. So we want to work with their results agendas, and we want to build on their systems on how to measure results in their countries in order to adjust to their views on what can be achieved and how. And exactly how projects and programs are managed and follow up, that's something that the government leaves to the implementing actors to decide. There is no such prescribed model for the Swedish government. So rather, we welcome efforts to develop and try out new approaches, which is being proposed in the report, such as the problem-driven iterative adaptation or other models. And possibly, as Kathy pointed out very wisely, it is also time to look at the communication strategies. There I feel that most politicians of today, no matter what area you are working in, have a challenge in order to try to explain more and more complex situations, developments, to an opinion, to a media with a very short attention span, and maybe less adherence to understanding and wanting to understand what is complex and what takes a long time to address. So there, I think you're quite right, Kathy. We need to work on the communication to public opinion and to other partners. So as a last point, I also think that what needs to be done is to not throw out everything that was done with or what is still being done with resource-based management. We should not throw out what good has come out of it, because research shows that it can take many shapes, the result-based management. It does not necessarily need to be short-sighted or quantitative. It could be more qualitative and long-term based. It also indicates that it depends on how it's being interpreted and applied. It can either create problems or promote good solutions. So we need to look at what and how result-based management is being used, what assumptions it's based on, and the time perspective it takes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all of you for interesting sharing your experiences and your reflections on both what has happened so far, but also what is ahead. And now I'd like to welcome Kathy to come up. Yes. Please, it's time for the broader panel. And we just like to hear a very brief comment. Now when you listen to these colleagues, Swedish colleagues, and they describe the Swedish experience, what are your reflections compared to UK?
Can you infect us?
No, really interesting. I'm dying to find out, I mean, in terms of what Laura was explaining, it almost sounds like a paradigm shift in the broader sector. So I think in terms of learning about paradigmatic shifts, this is going to be a really interesting experience. And I think, as you were saying, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think results-based management can work quite well. And there's evidence in a lot of partner countries of, say, it working well in health systems, though not necessarily for the reasons that are assumed. And I think, again, it's looking at the assumptions about whether it's just financial incentives that create change, say, in medical staff in Zambia or what have you, or whether it's actually peer pressure, how the focus on results actually work. There's some interesting research going on there looking at what really triggers the change. Yeah, I think the South Africa example is obviously a really important one in terms of, I think, historically of thinking about, yes, if you focus too much on the wrong results, what will happen? But I found it really stimulating, and as I say, it's such a different context, and if you look historically, CEDA has always put ownership and partnership very at the front of the way it works with partners, and I think that's something that we've definitely lost in the UK. So we've stopped giving budget support to partner governments and people that have been doing research on the ownership agenda sort of suggest that has more or less gone from UK aid. So most money is managed from private sector suppliers, and there's much less going directly to governments than there was previously. So I think there is quite a big difference there. But as I say, I really look forward to learning about the research and the trust-based management and what implications it has for international aid and other sectors, because I think our public sectors, education, there are similar concerns from professionals in those areas and health. So I think there's also lots of mutual opportunities to learn from these experiments for our broader public sector.
Now it's almost time for you to come in. So please prepare some really critical questions. This sounds so very good. Is it that good? And are we really heading in this direction? Please think of some really good comments and questions. But first, I'd like to let Joachim have a comment here.
Thank you. I just want to point out, going forward, I think it's really important not to mix trust-based results management from trust-based risk management, because that's totally different. I think you mixed it up a little bit, Magnus, with risk management and results management, because the compliance side of development cooperation will still be very, very important. And we work in some of the most corrupt countries, and we have more than 100 cases every year. So I think trusting compliance and trusting the corruption policies will not be enough. We still need control, in a sense, when it comes to the risk management side. Mm. The results side, on the other hand, there we can be more, I think, trust-oriented. So I think we need a little bit of both.
Okay.